And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is August 1st, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Today we are going to have a case study on what is going on in Turkey. But before that, I want to mention something that I just learned yesterday on the Israeli army radio. It was an incredible moment in history when we started to exist in 1948, the State of Israel. And as such, we want to participate in the Olympics Games. Now, the Olympic committee, the Israeli one, was presented by the Palestinian organization. And as such, they got an invitation to participate to the London Games in 1948. You see, the Olympic in 1948 were after the war. It was incredible, stressful time. So the Olympic committee sent the invitation to then Palestinian delegation. And as the Palestinian delegation became the delegation of the State of Israel, they presented themselves, and English said, we cannot accept that because the invitation was issued to the Palestinian. So they said, why? Said, because Palestine ceased to exist once the State of Israel was created. You see, that moment in history when everybody knew what is the destiny of the Palestine as a land. You see, there was not other option for the Palestinian entity. It was a land, and it was designated to the home of the Jews. If you go and research those papers, you'll find the committee involvement in such a declaration, by saying that Israel is the face of the new entity on Palestinian land, and Palestine was only the territory. So that was something that I wanted to mention before we go on, because I was like incredibly excited yesterday when I heard about it, because so many laws that we have in effect, and we always ask, what's the legislator wanted to say? And by the Olympic Committee deciding and calling it the way it is, we understood what actually was supposed to happen. Now let's go on. We have a case study that I wanted to give you on Turkey. Because the Turkish involvement right now is occupying everybody's mind, and it's not easy to understand what's in stake, especially when tonight or this afternoon in Syria, there was a Russian helicopter was shut down again. So the all area is getting a little inflamed, then we need to pay attention. So let's start with whatever Mr. Ambassador Bolton had to say the night of the coup attempt.
And former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, joins us. Good evening, Ambassador. And as you look at these pictures and see what's going on in Turkey, your thoughts?
Well, I think we really don't have any good idea what the disposition of the Turkish military is. We know the coup originated with some in the military, the senior officers, many who have been put in place in the past several years by Erdogan, obviously are part of the problem from the perspective of those carrying out the coup. So there's no doubt this is not run from the very top of the military, but it's a kind of last-ditch effort by those who still adhere to the vision of Mustafa Kemal to have a secular constitution, a secular society. And it's perhaps unique in Western governments that the constitution itself gives the military the duty of maintaining the secular nature of the state, which Erdogan has been doing everything he can to overturn. So I think it remains very much up in the air. I don't think these television pictures tell us very much. You're hearing competing press statements, but I think the future of Turkey is obviously at stake here. If the coup succeeds, then I think Erdogan's effort perhaps to recreate the Ottoman Caliphate, perhaps to be the dominant power again in the Middle East, and to move Turkey in an Islamic direction will be foiled. If Erdogan prevails, I think you would see an acceleration of the Islamicization efforts he's been making.
Well, it puts the United States in an awkward position. We support elected governments, we don't support coups. Yet the way that you describe it is that if given the choice, it seems that the United States would prefer that it move towards, less towards an Islamic government and towards a more secular one.
Well, I think the president's statement just a few minutes ago seems to indicate he's backing Erdogan the same way for a good long time they backed Mohamed Morsi in Egypt. I think it's not a question of elected governments versus military governments, at least in the case of Turkey. It's a question of the Constitution, which Erdogan has been doing his best to subvert. It's not only that he's been trying to get his supporters, Islamicists, in the top jobs in the military. He's been systematically packing the judiciary to that effect as well. So that's why I think this really is kind of a last stand by the secularists who are still in the army, and that may bode poorly for their chances of success. But on the other hand, as I say, at least on a public level, I don't think we have now any estimate of how much of the military backs the coup and how much of the military and the police oppose the coup.
Should we be worried? Does this impact us here in the United States? I mean, as Americans are watching this across the country and looking at these pictures and trying to figure out, who's doing what, how does it impact Americans?
Well, if Turkey goes in the direction that Erdogan wants, toward a more Islamicist state, I think that increasing radicalization just contributes to the growing chaos across the region. If the military wins, it's still going to be difficult, but Erdogan once said when he was mayor of Istanbul, and I think this is in the minds of a lot of Turkish citizens, civilians and military, Erdogan once said, democracy is like a streetcar. You ride it to the stop you want, and then you get off. So it may sound ironic, but the defender not only of the secular state, but the possibility of democracy into the future here could well be the military against this kind of authoritarian internal coup by somebody like Erdogan.
But Erdogan is someone we know, is someone we have worked with for a while.
I don't agree with that. He was head of the AKP party back in 2003 when the United States sought permission from the government of Turkey to bring in the 4th Division, 4th Infantry Division, across the Turkish border into Iraq. And we couldn't get the votes. And Erdogan said, I did my best, and so on and so forth. I have always believed he sabotaged our efforts back then. So I have no charity in my heart for Erdogan. If he goes down, I'm not shedding any tears. I don't think he's been a friend of the United States.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he's been. I didn't mean to say he was a friend, but he's someone we know who we've worked with. I mean, we at least know him that way. I mean, it's someone we have, whether he's been cooperative or not, at least it's a known entity. If the military is successful in this coup, who does emerge as the one in charge? And, what's the certainty there for us?
Well, I don't think we know, but, we know Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping well, too. That to me is not evidence in support of their remaining in power necessarily. I think there could be confusion if the military prevails. It likely is people at the lower general grade level who are doing this because they're the last ones that haven't been purged. And so therefore the question of the loyalty of all of the various military units around the country remains to be determined. And at this point, the journalists are mostly sitting in Istanbul and Ankara. And I don't think have any real way of knowing what the sentiment of the troops is throughout the country.
What do you think German Chancellor Angela Merkel is thinking tonight as she looks at this?
Well, look, she's made a mess of this whole refugee situation in Europe. I have a lot of respect for Merkel, but this has been a debacle. And I think the Erdogan government facilitated the movement of those hundreds of thousands, perhaps even millions of refugees out of Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East. So, if anything, I think that the restoration of a secular government here is more likely to stem the refugee flow. I think the military is more likely to say we've got to get control of this situation.
And it's being reported right now that the, at least being reported in Turkey, that the coup attempt has been repelled. So that sounds like it might be, I mean, that Erdogan has regained control.
Well, it's certainly possible. As I say, at this point, we've got a lot of competing press releases, and we'll see what happens as the evening goes on. Just very difficult to tell from a distance.
There also were some flashes and explosions, but I don't know what that was. We saw a picture that I can't, you know, I don't know what they are. I just noticed them in the background as we look at these pictures.
All right. And we are back. Okay. We're starting a case study on the situation in Turkey and what was involved from the beginning of the coup. Of course, we know that the coup did not succeed and Erdogan is in power and still in power. Now, Ambassador Bolton was concerned to how much of the military was a part of it. And we know now that a third of the military was a part of it. We know that he took off all the judiciaries, you know, that are all the judges that were in place, he took them out, and journalists too. So he took all the important modes of democracy out of function, and that's what CREATE actually is, totalitarian government right now. And on top of it, he actually closed the light on the base that's supposed to be under U.S. control to fight ISIS in the region. So let's go on to the next segment.
They've called it rooting out the virus. A wave of arrests over the past fortnight against the alleged coup plotters and those who backed them. Tens of thousands suspended or detained. Schools, media outlets and companies closed down. All are accused of supporting Fethullah Gülen, the exiled cleric who the government says masterminded the coup. With his schools in 140 countries, he's spread his influence over decades, his followers working across Turkey's institutions. They say he's a peaceful scholar. Critics call it a dangerous cult.
The Gülen structure aims to surround the state from within and take over. They are not armed militants but cloak themselves as judges, teachers, MPs and businessmen. Right-wing governments have used the Gülenists against the secular military. They got their biggest power during Recep Tayyip Erdogan's rule.
The Gülen-Erdogan alliance was strong, Islamists reshaping secular Turkey. When hundreds of military officers were tried a few years ago on false evidence, Gülenists were thought to be behind it.
And 1 month after the ceremony, I was arrested.
This former naval captain spent 33 months in prison and believes it paved the way for the recent coup.
If they couldn't manage to get rid of us during these trials, this coup attempt couldn't be happened by his followers, because they put his followers instead of us once they get rid of us.
The Gülen schools were among Turkey's best, now labelled breeding grounds for terrorism. A fifth column that has to be removed, or a purge too far. Debate rages. The government says cleansing education will remove Fethullah Gülen's ideology. But the purge is far wider. Journalists, diplomats, NGOs, even Turkish airline staff have been detained or dismissed, prompting accusations that all opponents are being grouped together and rounded up. Over 130 media outlets will now be closed. Many of the journalists facing arrest warrants have already fled. We tracked down one who says the Gülen movement never aimed to seize the state.
How could you, plot a coup through the media organization? I will not accept this infiltration, a sort of conspiracy theory in Turkey. These are the citizens of Turkey. They have every right to be in each and every institution of the Turkish government.
It's 2 weeks since a coup that united Turks against it. The aftermath has shaken every part of society. It could take a generation to recover. Mark Lowen, BBC News, Istanbul.
All right. And we are back. All right. In 2 weeks, In 2 weeks, he managed to arrest all of his opponents and create some new rules in the country. Now, on top of everything, he was blaming the American government for not cooperating by giving him his opponent, so-called opponent, which he has no proof yet to show for, as you know, if they're gonna arrest him or not. There is no reason. The guy did not do any such thing to call upon a coup. But being in suspicious mind that Erdogan is, probably think everybody is against him. But the idea is that we all want Turkey to go back to where it was. It was heaven for tourists. It was a great nation for, you know, international commerce. And it was the quiet place, like in the middle of all this craziness. And settling back will take some effort, but I'm sure that we all want that, and I'm sure that Erdogan wants to be a part of it. Now, he's having a standoff with the European Union, telling them that he wants to have the rights, a visa for people to travel there. If not, he's not going to have continue his agreement. It's not going to be in coordinates with the European Union on the immigrants agreement that they had a few months back. So we need to still search it. Let's listen to the next segment.
Rewarded for their loyalty, 99 military top brass have been promoted in an overhaul of the armed forces following Turkey's failed coup. Many other men in uniform accused of involvement in the uprising have been dismissed or detained. The man at the top of Recep Tayyip Erdogan's wanted list is the US-based cleric Ankara claims masterminded the coup attempt. And with no sign yet of the United States extraditing Fethullah Gulen, who denies involvement, the president lashed out at Washington and the West. Instead of saying thank you to this state which repelled the coup d'etat, thank you in the name of democracy, you're standing next to the coup plotters. What's more, the plotter of this coup is in your country. Erdogan's fury's been stoked by suggestions from US intelligence officials that purges in the Turkish military are harming cooperation in the fight against ISIL. Not so, insists Turkey's foreign minister, who's also denounced Europe for trying, quote unquote, to give us lessons in democracy.
All right. You see, it's a continuation of a blaming game, and they need to really relax a minute, because we can go all on craziness and decide that everybody's going to fight everybody, and it's going to bring us to nowhere. And tonight, where the Russian probably very, very upset about what's happening with the resistance movement in Syria, that put down the helicopter, the chopper that's supposed to be in coordinates to help with to help and assist in humanitarian aid to the people on the ground. I'm sure that Mr. Putin is not very pleased. Now, let's talk about how we ease up the tension. All right. The European Union and some other humanitarian organization been complained that all this organized effort of Syria and Russia to help the refugees or wherever people that's scattered around, they're not really conducting a joint effort with the other organization. They don't know how it's going to be. But knowing how Russia is operating by itself most of the time, I'm sure that instead of waiting for authorization and let's go do things together, they just decided to go ahead and start it. I think in the next few days, if we start having a collaboration of other organization, and I'm going to really, really pretend that no harm, no foul is done in any segment of the population. We really want to take it to the next level. We don't want to settle down and decide that we are going to fight it, okay? You guys have to understand that we can't create a world war if we want any given time, especially when men running the show. Okay, I'm a woman, I know that you guys are easy, you know, easy, but surely take it to that direction. So let's back up a little. Erdogan needs to get off his horses. This guy in America is not going to be extradited because there is no reason to create, you know, like a show to what happened to somebody who does not is not loyal to Mr. Erdogan, okay? And that decree of the Turks government to decide to kill people before we have actually a judgment, a real judgment, and to kill is going to take them off the list of the European Union. So I suggest not to be harsh and not to think fast about killing everybody that opposed to you, Mr. Erdogan. Let's go back to the plan that you going back to the European Union and become a member. Because being a member of NATO holds a responsibility. And right now, the NATO decided that you guys have enough power to protect yourself. But we say that NATO, Mr. Erdogan, NATO is protecting the Turks, not Mr. Erdogan himself, okay? So the democracy around the alliance forces needs to be preserved. And if you guys decide to break off from democracy and decided to change from secularism to a really different one, you will be or disengaged from NATO, or NATO will have to come and protect the people. So you really don't have to fear the American base because you have allies forces that are going to do the job. So I think that we have a moment of impossibility. We cannot go one direction. We need to stop and look to the other. So let's think about how we can cooperate together and help the people in Syria that really need some help now and not start creating new problems in Turkey. Turkey does not deserve to go through a turmoil. All right? Let's keep on going and listen to the next segment.
A high-ranking U.S. Army official has denied Turkey's accusation that he supported those behind the mid-July failed coup in the country.
Any reporting that I had anything to do with the recent unsuccessful coup attempt in Turkey is unfortunate and completely inaccurate.
Commander of U.S. forces in the Middle East, General Joseph Votel, also called Turkey, a vital partner for the U.S. in the region. Votel further thanked Turkey for its cooperation in, quote, the fight against Daesh. Earlier Friday, Votel warned the Turkish government that its crackdown on the country's armed forces could downgrade Ankara's military cooperation with Washington. Votel's comments sparked immediate reactions from Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who accused them of siding with the country's coup plotters.
Now one of them, a general or an admiral who is unfortunately at an important post in the U.S., says I see and hear that those in the upper command, echelons whom we are in contact with, are among those detained. He says this, a person should feel some shame. Who are you to decide such a thing? Who are you? First off, now your place, now what you are. Instead of standing and thinking this state in the name of democracy for its fending off the coup, you side with the coup plotters. Besides, the coup plotters is in your country anyway. You can never convince my people otherwise.
Erdogan also harshly criticized the U.S. for, quote, not standing firmly against a failed military coup. The Turkish president accused Washington of harboring U.S.-based opposition figure Fethullah Gulen, who Ankara believes is behind the attempted putsch. Turkey has demanded that U.S. extradite Gulen. However, the self-exiled cleric has firmly denied the charges, urging Washington to resist calls for his extradition. Meanwhile, a part of a massive crackdown on suspected supporters of the coup, Turkish Prime Minister Bin Ali Yildirim said the government will shut down an air base near Ankara, as well as all military barracks that were used during the coup bid. Now we're joined out of Washington by Mr. James Jatras, former U.S. Senate foreign policy analyst. Welcome to the program, Mr. Jatras, once again. And now Ankara has been leaking out these random accusations against the U.S. since the very beginning of this failed coup attempt. How can this affect relations between the two countries?
Certainly it won't do anything positive to those relations. I must say I find it a little bit ironic that Mr. Erdogan is saying to the Americans, who do you think you are trying to overthrow our government here? He's been trying to overthrow the Assad government of Syria for the last 5 years. Who does he think he is? I guess he doesn't like it when the shoe is on the other foot. As far as any involvement of the U.S. military or the CIA and other agencies, I think this has to be tied to his accusation that Fethullah Gulen was involved in this coup. If he was, then yes, that definitely would point to a U.S. connection. However, as far as I know, Mr. Erdogan has made these accusations and has not brought forth any evidence to show that either the United States or Gulen was really involved in this. I'm not saying they weren't, but I'm just saying we haven't seen the evidence there. It may be, if they weren't involved, he's making this accusation for political reasons, that for some reason of his own agenda, he wants to distance himself from Washington. So there's still a lot that hasn't come into daylight yet about what's really going on here.
Well, the U.S. Also mentioned that they'll be willing to extradite him as soon as a file comes through proving his how he was part of that conspiracy, trying to be behind that coup. They said as soon as Ankara is able to substantiate this claim, they'll extradite Gulen, but yet Ankara has yet to forward anything to back up their claim.
Exactly, and not only would they have to deliver the evidence, it's still something that would take some time. Gulen is not lacking in financial resources. He will lawyer up. He will fight this tooth and claw in the American courts. And I would not look for him to be extradited to Turkey anytime soon.
And this U.S. general in question, who also echoed these concerns of Ankara's allies, we've heard through Ankara's allies about Erdogan's administration taking this post-coup purge too far. Do you feel this is a valid concern, or do you think Erdogan is justified in clearing every threat that he feels is on his soil at this time at all costs?
I'm not in a position to say what's justified and not justified in a Turkish internal affair, but as an outside observer, I think it's quite clear that Erdogan is something of a megalomaniac, that he has intended to seize total power in Turkey for some time, and whatever was happened with the coup, whoever was behind it, it certainly has worked out well for him. As he himself indicated, it was a godsend. The coup was sent from God to allow him to move forward with what he wants to do. He's purging not only the military, but the judiciary, the media, the education system. It really begs credibility that all of these people were really involved in any kind of coup plot.
And even if it strengthens him on the domestic forum, don't you think it's going to hurt him on the international arena?
Well, it's hard to know what would exactly hurt him, given how many bridges he's burned with various people. Now, he is supposed to meet with Vladimir Putin on, I believe, August 9th. I don't know if he can go back in that direction after he so thoroughly poisoned the well with Moscow, but it seems almost as though he is deliberately trying to ruin his relationship with Washington and with Europe so that he leaves himself only the prospect of getting closer to Russia and perhaps also toward Iran, even if those overtures may not be entirely successful. It's hard to know what he thinks he's doing in that regard.
Thank you, Mr. James Jatras, for your contribution to Press TV's Top 5. Once again, that was Mr. James Jatras joining us out of Washington, former U.S. Senate foreign policy analyst.
All right. I think we're doing good deal today to understand what's going on in Turkey, because we don't want to assess the situation in our direction or whatever we like. We want to take the truth, only the truth, and see what happens. You see, the coup was not right as far as Erdogan goes, of course, but whatever happened after that is not right to the Turks. So we need to keep in mind that we want to go back to a Turkey that is I don't know if I can say secular. I'm just saying free. You can be religious and believer, but you can keep the country free. And Erdogan was saying that he's doing so. So let's hope that we're going to see it. But meanwhile, NATO forces is empowering itself. It's going to be organizing its troops in the right direction, because everybody is on alert, an eye alert, and the trigger is really easy to use. So we want to use our brain and think how we can stop any hostility from any kind in any way. And the fact that there was a little demonstration yesterday in Germany toward the Turks government and the support of Erdogan created a little sensitive matter with the Germans and the Turks government. Erdogan wanted to speak via satellite to the group that gathered to rally for him. And the German felt that it's like... it's obstruction of sovereignty. When you have a country that is redispositioning itself like Erdogan is doing and going across nation and talking in the center of Germany, and in Germany you have 3.5 million Turks that can have a lot of effect on the national population. You see, if you rally the troops in the wrong way, 3 million people can create a lot of damage. And anything that they do right now is to calm the situation, not to arouse them and not to create more mess that they have with the immigrants and all. So the Germans had the right to refuse. Erdogan called the ambassador of Germany in Ankara today to complain. But the truth of the matter, he didn't have the right to do it. You know, you can bring people, voices to a demonstration if the national security permit. If not, you just say thank you and the next time. This is how politics goes, you know. So after that, I'll tell you something about the local politics that has gone out of whack, but let's keep on our case study on Turkey today.
A Turkish prosecutor has accused the CIA and the FBI of having links to those behind the failed coup that took place earlier this month. According to his office, two top American intelligence bodies provided training to the followers of US-based Islamic scholar Fethullah Gulen, and that is who Turkey believes masterminded the coup.
The CIA and FBI provided trainings to plotters who attended centres linked to the Gulen movement. The failed coup attempt aimed to weaken the state by getting rid of the government completely. Those in the Gulen movement who worked in the judicial and security institutions and who received training tried to put this task into action.
Reacting to the thousands of arrests that have followed the failed uprising in Turkey, some US military chiefs have voiced criticism. James Clapper, Director of National Intelligence, said he expects cooperation between the United States and Turkey will take a turn for the worse. US General Joseph Votel also claimed collaboration could be impacted. Well, President Erdogan has slammed such rhetoric.
One should be ashamed. Ashamed. It's not up to you to make that decision. Who are you? Know your place. Instead of thanking this nation that quashed the coup in the name of democracy, on the contrary, you're taking sides with the coup plotters.
On Thursday, demonstrators burned American flags outside the gates of the NATO airbase in Incirlik. That was in protest against the US presence in the country. That base is crucial for the US. It hosts 2,000 American troops as well as 250 German soldiers. More importantly, though, it also houses dozens of nuclear warheads. Well, this protest is just the latest in a series of setbacks in relations between Turkey and America following the coup attempt of 2 weeks ago.
The U.S. values its friendship with Turkey.
Turkey is a close ally of the United States.
Turkey's an important partner and ally.
Turkey's been a strong ally
for decades.
But the feeling isn't always mutual. And the failed military coup in mid-July added an extra complication. The United States keeps part of its nuclear arsenal in Turkey, at the Incirlik Air Base. It has been searched by Turkish prosecutors and police. The base commander was detained, along with over a dozen lower-ranking officers, all accused of complicity in the attempted coup. The U.S. was quick to play down the situation.
We were able to conduct the campaign previously without having Incirlik. We have the ability to adjust our operations in such a way that we can account for problems or delays there.
But Turkey further inflamed matters by accusing a U.S. general of organizing the uprising, and even suggested Obama was personally aware of the plot. Turkey also slammed the U.S. for harboring a man who Ankara considers to be a terrorist and the mastermind of the coup attempt.
We all know that Fethullah Gulen is the leader of a terrorist organization. The nation supporting this person is not a friend of Turkey. It is an open enemy of Turkey.
Washington went on the defensive.
We invite the government of Turkey, as we always do, to present us with any legitimate evidence that withstands scrutiny. And the United States will accept that and look at it and make judgments about it appropriately.
And with neither side backing down, Washington's alliance with Ankara is looking more vulnerable than ever.
Well, we asked experts for their views on the tense relations between the United States and Turkey.
There is a risk of a clear crisis between the relationship between Turkey and, the United States as well. And we have seen that there is a sensible impact also in the public opinion in Turkey. There are some riots in front of the Incirlik base and also in some other parts of the country. This is potentially a very huge problem for the United States, because until now Turkey was one of the most important allies on the Middle East.
This is an effort by Erdogan to distance himself from the United States, and he knows that he's got some leverage because the United States is dependent upon those air bases in Incirlik. Typical of Erdogan in terms of he's taking a very convenient image and using it as a leverage to try to unite his followers and provide justification for taking out his enemies.
All right. Now we are witnessing the fact that everybody is feeling a little unsure about the position that Erdogan is taking, and the fact that he's taking advantage of the position that he is in when the airbase is based in Turkey and it's holding nevertheless 50 warheads of nuclear weapon, which is dangerous if it's going to fall to the wrong end. So whatever you guys do, just take control of that base and make sure that nothing happened. The fact that the Turks had the ability to go inside and arrest the head or sustain or detain him or whatever mean that it was a very risky business. I don't know if I'm sure that all the American troops are smart enough and they have enough quantity to sustain themselves with the German forces. So by all means, God bless you all. Just make sure that you become a fortress and don't undermine any attempt, because right now everything is risk and you holding a very, very potential weapon there that needs to be protected no matter what. No matter what, it needs to be protected. And I don't care what Erdogan is doing. Now, Erdogan needs to go back to his place. The fact that he's talking, who are you? Let's go. Everybody has to be on his quiet base and do its best to promote security for the people that he's responsible for. Because there was so many people that changed in the last few years. So he doesn't want to be an ex president, okay? So the fact that he's going to take control over the military that actually is protecting the secular movement of the country is making me understand that military forces is used by dictators. So he needs to go back and assess the situation. And of course, in Israel, they said that they're going to help him in any way they can to prevent anything from happening. But we need to sustain the effort to help the refugees and the emergency situation that there is in Syria. And please, let's not forget, that's more important. People, our lives are in stake right now. So let's get our act together and get over ourselves and our ego trip. You're drawn, you won. Let's keep on going and become nations. One another, bring brotherhood of men. It's time, okay? Now, on that note, I want to have some music, maybe, before we wrap it up, okay? Let's get some music.
This ain't a song for the broken heart.
And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible True. It's my life. Bon Jovi, remember, guys, this is our life. We need to pray to God to help us go through this motion. This time in history is so tricky, but we have the wisdom, we have the knowledge, and we have the power to overcome every challenge that we have in the way. So just think that we have everything in check. Remember that game that where everything is settled on the right place, where you cannot move because and you must do the right thing, because doing the wrong thing will break the rules. So here we go. This is the time, and this is now is happening. Let's listen to what NATO has to do about it now.
Next, leaders from NATO countries met in Poland today to finalize plans to beef up the military alliance. For the first time since the Cold War, multinational troops will continuously rotate through four countries in Eastern Europe. Special correspondent Nick Schifrin, with the help of the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting, concludes our series with a look at America's largest military buildup there in a quarter century and why Russia sees it as a threat.
Here's the scenario. An unnamed enemy has invaded a NATO ally. The U.S. response is heavy and swift. For U.S. troops who've been fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, this is more firepower than they've ever had.
That was wild.
We've been fighting an insurgency for the last 14 years. Now we're prepared to fight someone who is closely matched to our combat power.
Captain Joel Marbit deployed twice to Afghanistan. This exercise, held last month, was the largest in Eastern Europe since the Cold War.
Now they're prepared for any enemy counterattack to come back across the international border.
Marbit isn't allowed to name that enemy, but in the command tent, Lieutenant Colonel Johnny Evans pulls fewer punches when discussing his Polish hosts.
And they see, you know, examples of Russian aggression. Us being here, assuring them that the U.S. has not abandoned them, that the U.S. is still a strong supporter of NATO, can do nothing but provide additional assurance.
On the training ground, there was even a burned-out Soviet-style tank for target practice. This isn't only assurance to allies, it's also deterrence and a warning to Russia. After the Cold War, the U.S. military dramatically downsized in Europe from 200,000 to 30,000 troops. Now, the U.S. is beginning to quadruple spending and will rotate 4,200 soldier heavily armored brigades back-to-back with their own equipment at the highest level of readiness.
That is a powerful capability that will be very effective at changing the calculus for Russia or any potential adversary in Europe.
General Ben Hodges commands all U.S. Army forces in Europe. those new American troops are in addition to 700-person NATO battalions deploying to the Baltic states and Poland. We spoke to Hodges during the Poland exercise.
I think the combination of a NATO battalion plus a U.S. Armored Brigade combat team, that's a powerful deterrent. If deterrence fails, now you're talking about a liberation campaign.
For the Poles, that word liberation doesn't feel far-fetched.
The Poles are very nervous, obviously, because of World War II.
Few Polish politicians have more World War II credentials than Minister and Senator Anna Maria Anders. Her father was Władysław Anders, who fought the Soviets as Poland's army commander. Today, this community remembers how, during the war, the Soviets deported local residents to Siberia.
These people are worried that it'll happen again.
What convinced them that it could happen
Crimea.
In 2014, Russian soldiers in Crimea sparked an annexation from Ukraine. It took less than a month.
I think that we have all become a little complacent. You know, we haven't had a war in so long.
U.S. soldiers are teaching Poles military hardware, starting in childhood.
Princess.
That's where the trust starts. From that youngest generation, building trust, they understand that America is aligned with Poland.
There you go. Oh, good job.
Lieutenant Colonel Derek Holbrook leads the 2nd Cavalry's Field Artillery Squadron. Part of the Polish exercise is visiting small towns like Suwalki. Soldiers and fathers encourage kids to become comfortable with guns. Nearby, young baton twirlers entertain the crowd. It seemed like this entire town of 60,000 showed up in support. The next morning, Holbrook's men hit the road. They were on a 500-mile drive, the longest military movement in Eastern Europe since World War II. They drove through this 60-mile-wide gap between NATO members Poland and Lithuania.
This is the Suwalki Gap, where NATO's notion of collective self-defense is perhaps most vulnerable. 30 miles to my west, Kaliningrad, a Russian enclave. 30 miles to my east, Belarus, a Russian ally. If Russia wanted to move into this gap, it could most likely cut off the Baltic states from the rest of Europe and the rest of NATO.
That geography is a product of NATO's expansion east. In 1949, NATO's eastern border was Italy. By 1999, it added 7 more countries. By 2009, 9 more countries, including the Baltics. Suddenly, NATO had beachheads on Russia's border.
If we would discover that there would be Russian troops in Mexico, I wonder how many American politicians and indeed American people would think that this is an acceptable situation.
Dmitry Symes leads the Washington think tank, the Center for the National Interest. For Russia, NATO isn't defensive. Since 1999, NATO has launched wars in Kosovo, Afghanistan, and Libya. Each one ended in regime change.
And that certainly created an impression in Moscow that NATO expansion was a direct threat, not just to their security, but also to their domestic stability.
Russia again felt threatened when the U.S. either encouraged or supported revolutions in previously pro-Russian countries. The final straw was Ukraine.
If Ukraine is hostile and joins NATO, that would be viewed by Russia as an existential threat.
This isn't only the thinking of intellectuals or the Moscow elite.
We're not going to Mexico. Imagine if Russia moved its troops there.
Vitaly Anatolievich is a Cossack commander in the breakaway Ukrainian region of Donetsk. His forefathers, known as Free Cossacks, were notorious and feared 19th century horsemen. They fought and died for this land they referred to as Greater Russia. Today, they're training their children what Cossacks have stood for generations, love of land and church. It's a nostalgia for the days before the Soviet Union collapsed.
Do you feel like what you're doing now is trying to restore the power and pride that was lost in 1991?
Of course I feel that. It's a renaissance here. This is pure patriotism.
That patriotism is a pledge to be an irregular force for Russia in Ukraine and beyond. And they cheer disunity in the European Union because they oppose what they perceive as Western culture.
We don't educate them as they do in Europe about gay pride and all that. Is that normal? It's not normal.
the cultural and military divides within Europe are widening. Another flashpoint, newly built NATO missile defense sites in Romania and Poland. Russia labels them threats and vows to retaliate.
Yesterday, in those areas of Romania, people simply did not know what it means to be in the crosshairs. Then, today, we will be forced to carry out certain measures to ensure our security.
For Russia to say that this is threatening to them is a ridiculous assertion.
Russia would say that those missile defense systems can be turned from the Middle East toward Russia.
If, and it's extremely unlikely, but if Russia ever launched a nuclear or missile strike, I mean, there would be hundreds of missiles. So this defense shield that's been installed is for individual, I mean, it's a completely different scenario.
President Putin's threats are made possible by nearly a decade of Russian military expansion, according to one study.
All right, we're back because we're running out of time. I think that this session was incredible because we start to understand what's in stake. Now, let me complete something about the Russian position. Mr. Putin is complaining that those rockets, that the missiles that are there, the shell can contain also a nuclear weapon that can actually jeopardize the state of security of Russia. So his alert or his concern about it is very reasonable. You have to understand it's really, really reasonable for Mr. Putin to be concerned. So America's position right now needs to be of cooperation and understanding and working together, because we don't want to launch any kind of misunderstanding. And trust me, between culture, every segment of understanding needs to be acute and really detailed, okay? Because the Russian has a concern, the American know exactly what they're doing. Now, let me tell you all about an event that is going to take place next week on Wednesday, August 10, 2016, at 12 noon to 1:30 p.m. at the Rayburn House office building in Washington, D.C. This is a MET organization is going to have a session called Turkey Ramification After the Attempt Coup. So this session is really incredible because we're going to have Dr. Aykan Erdemir, is probably the ex-parliamentary member of Turkey, and Dr. Jonathan Chancer that are going to explain everybody. You need to reserve it. So it's emetonline.org/event/Turkey. And all the rest, emetonline.org, an event probably will bring you to that page. As I said, August 10. Try to understand. Understanding the issues is really important. Making a real clear judgment of where Turkey is going to be and how we're going to bring it back to a settled democracy. We don't want to aggravate the troops. And right now, we need to make sure that the humanitarian aid in Syria are taking place. So I ran out of time, and I want to bless you all and thank you for the time you've been spending with me. As always, I love you and send all my love to you. And I want to tell all the candidates that we have in the U.S. for presidency, you're all good, you're all great. You arrived at this point not for nothing. So I pledge you, I pledge my support to the United States and tell them that whoever you choose, it's good for us, it's good for everybody, it's good for the world. We'll work it out. They're all wonderful, okay? The Americans have wonderful people, and they're brave and they're smart, and whatever it takes, it will be okay. Just settle in. Don't fight. Make it sports again. And we're waiting for the Olympics to start in a few days. God bless you all. God bless you all, the world, okay? Around. Ciao, ciao.